The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
All right, well, good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. I am Bill Donahue. I'll be taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 18th day of February, 2018. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. Now, we've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, former Major League catcher. He played from 92 to 2006, primarily as a backup catcher for most of his career. Currently the manager of the Greensboro Grasshoppers. We know him affectionately as Tank, the backup for Mike Piazza. Todd Pratt will be with us. In the second half, we'll talk to the former kickstarter of the great offense of the 1986 New York Mets, present-day skipper of the New Britain Bees. Wally Backman will be with us. So sit back, relax, and enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight. We've got some great stuff ahead for you in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, most cleverly titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and some more stuff. So stop by, give us a look. Then you can click, give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter. That's at Sports Talk 1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at sportstalk1240.com. Well, my first guest, best known to us, as I said, is the backup catcher to Hall of Famer Mike Piazza during his time with the Mets. And, of course, that walk-off solo homer against Manti in extra innings to clinch the series for the Mets that year. Sent them to the NLCS. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Todd Pratt. Todd, good evening.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's wonderful to have you, Tom. Growing up, who were your favorite teams, players, things like that?
I grew up in San Diego. I was born in Nebraska, but grew up in San Diego.
Ah, okay.
I'm a Padre fan, Dave Winfield, and obviously in those days, the 70s, 80s, I really root for the Dodgers. I love those Dodger-Yankee World Series back in the day.
Ah, sure, yeah. Reggie with the three home runs. Those were some great matchups for sure. Now, you were drafted in the sixth round of the 85 draft by the Red Sox. You went to the New York Penn League, but you had some trouble down there. Some of those kids are coming right out of college, and some of the Latin players have had professional experience, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it was, I was – like you said, sixth round pick out of high school. I think I was 50th high school player taken in that draft.
Uh-huh.
Like that. The day after I graduated out of high school, they put me on a plane. I didn't get a summer vacation like most kids get. The day after I graduated, they put me on a plane from San Diego to Elmira, New York. And, I scuffled,
Sure.
Biggest thing I can say there for you baseball fans is I watched Bobby Thigpen pitch in the College World Series, and the first day I put the uniform on, he was playing right field, and I'm like, oh, this is what's going on. So I took my lumps, but, my manager, I still remember him. I still remember my first manager. He was a tough Italian, Dick Berardino, and he believed in me. And, I went to Instruction League, and next year I had they moved me up to low eight ball, actually, the league I'm coaching in now, the South Atlantic League, and
right.
I had a good year, so.
Yeah, you did better in that South Atlantic
League. It was tough. It was tough catching slide. I never even caught a slider in high school back then in 85.
No.
I started playing against 22-year-old men, and I was like, oh, it was tough.
Yeah, overmatched, for sure. That's understandable. We got Todd Pratt with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, when you moved up to higher A, the Florida State League, you went to spring training, and, of course, the Winter Haven Red Sox. I've been to Winter Haven. I spent a week there one day, Todd.
Yeah.
Right?
You got it. The Red Sox really believed in me, and, I guess back then, I'm 20 years old, I'm 18, 19, 20 there, and, the biggest thing I remember there with the Red Sox organization is, Ted Williams and Charlie Strzemski fighting over me, who's going to work with me hitting. It was crazy. Ted used to say, you need an agent? I want to be your agent. I thought he was messing around. I finally got an agent, and I came back to spring training. He was mad at me.
Wow.
I said, Ted, I thought you were messing with me. He said, no, I want, help you out. I'm like, that was great. That was great having Yaz and Ted in my corner.
Exactly, Todd. I mean, who else would you rather have teaching you how to hit than the Splinter himself? Probably the, right? Him, Rogers, Hornsby, the greatest hitters in baseball history.
Oh yeah. You got it, man. It was amazing.
Now you went Rule 5. Picked up by Cleveland.
Right.
Yeah, and they sent you back to Boston, and you ended up in New Britain, where now Wally's managing. They're an independent league then, but then they belong to the Red Sox, right?
Yeah, I was probably a little immature, to get Rule 5 at the major league level. Coming out of Florida State League, I was just starting to learn. I'm just turned 21 actually when going into camp with the Indians, and I was just wasn't ready for the spotlight. It was probably my first mistake, there. I cocky, thought I was a big leaguer, and I just wasn't. So
yeah.
Kind of helped me out. They sent me back. Obviously, Boston wanted me back because everybody was surprised that someone took a 20-year-old catcher and was going to be a big league catcher. I impressed in practice and didn't really, I was too young. So it all worked out, and went to New Britain and kind of scuffled there through some 3 years of injuries. But I had a big believer. Butch Hobson, was my manager the last 2 years in AA, and he trusted me even though Eric Wedge was now the new prospect there, and he brought me to AAA, and Eric got hurt the first month of the season in AAA, and I started dominating.
Right. And
AAA was a savior for me because I was still young enough, 24, 25, but I started, that's when I really, my projections really started coming out.
Right. When you got to the International League with Philadelphia? Yeah. And then
in Boston too. No, Boston too. I was a rookie of the year there. Boston, I did good, but I probably would have been called up to Boston for a September call-up. But I broke my hamate bone, August 1st. So I missed that last month of season, and there was no reason to add me to the roster. And, it was a funny story. So I was a 6-year free agent. I signed with Baltimore, and a week later, Philadelphia Rule 5 me again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a crazy story.
Yeah. Now you were back up to, Dutch Dalton.
That was even crazier. So I didn't make the big league team, but obviously Baltimore wanted to keep their money since I was a free agent. And they actually sent me, after hitting 300 in AAA with Boston, they sent me to AA. I don't know if they did. I don't think they liked my defense. It was a great story. I was backing up Mike Lieberthal.
Mike Lieberthal,
19-year-old kid, and I'm like, so I started like 1-for-17. So I'm hitting low 69 or something like that. I go to the manager and tell him, hey, I'm 25. I'm here. I've been a great attitude, but why am I, I need to play, or you guys just need to, tell the organization that it's time,
Right.
He said to Todd, I'm going to talk to him. Anyway, long story short, I went 44-for-100 after that 1-for-17 was leading the league and hitting, and I got a call up to AAA, and go to AAA, and I'm backing up the catcher there, and the first 4 days I don't play, and I go to the manager and say, you know what I was doing in AA? And he's all, no, not really. I said, I was leading the league and hitting 330 something.
Yeah.
I was hitting. Anyway, the following night, the 16th something inning, it's Scranton-Wilkesboro. Lee Illy was my manager back then.
Lee Illy.
He looks at me and say, Pratt, you need a pinch hitter for the pitcher. It was a cold, dreary night. early, and I hit a walk-off home run opposite field.
Nice.
I started there going 10 for 10. So I started playing well there, and then the Phillies finally called me up. I think when Steve Lake got injured, and I got a call-up. That was my first. So I appreciate the Phillies giving me a chance and staying with me. And,
yeah.
Yeah. That's where it went.
They made
crazy,
it to
crazy
the...
stories. I should write a book. It's
yeah, you've been around
enough,
Todd.
I mean, we haven't
gotten
into New York stuff. Yeah.
We've got some good stuff going on. Todd Pratt again with us tonight, Sports Talk 1240. They made it to the series that year, Philadelphia. That was the year played Toronto.
92 was my first year, so that's when Steve got hurt. And I did well that year. And then 93, we were the National League champions, being the Braves, in the National League championship.
Right.
You know, back then it was only East and West.
Mm-hmm.
So, that shows you my age, but great series and that Toronto team. And we had a great, you know, beers, beards and bellies. You know, they were, that was for being my rookie year. Those guys are unbelievable.
Some characters on that ball club, right, Todd? You had Kruk, Dykstra, the Wild Thing, Mitch Williams, right?
Yeah. Dave Hollins, Pete Incaviglia.
Yeah.
Our pitching staff was all like 6'5" and above guys.
What about Schilling? You think Schilling's a Hall of Famer?
I a personal friend.
Yeah.
You know, I feel that some of his conservatism is hurting with some of the media.
Yeah.
It's close. It's, you know, I think what hurt him early in his career, but definitely at the end, you know, in the middle and the end of his career, he's one of the most dominant. Then you can add the playoff postseason games. I mean, if I'm going to take a top five pitchers even now, I'll take Kurt, you know, to pitch a game if we need to win. Now, I've caught a lot of good ones.
Now, 96, Todd, you stayed out in 96. You even worked for Domino's delivering pizza. Now, I know what that's like dropping out. I did a stint at Lowe's several years ago, so I know what that, you know, getting a job to get a job is.
Yeah, the strike hurt me there. I mean, 93, I had a good season. 94, obviously, that's when baseball was shut down by the commissioner, and I think I was hitting 200 at the time. I actually think my last game, we all knew we were striking the next day. I think my last game I was hitting .198. I had to go 3 for 3 to get over 200. I did it, but gosh darn it, I had to get that fourth at bat, you know? And
yeah.
So anyway, you know, I went to spring training and it just didn't work out. I came home. You know, my wife had first child, and I'm like, well, you know, I actually worked at Bucky Dent School of Baseball.
Right, yeah.
Where I used to train, and the guy that used to feed the kids there all summer came up to me about the last 2 weeks of camp and said, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know, maybe do, you know, lessons and kind of figure out what I want to do. And he said, why don't you come work for me? I owe 20 stores, but you have to start at the bottom of the pole. I can't just give you a good job. You can make it a year. I'll give you a car and you just watch them all. You'd be like the area supervisor. I said, all right, I have no problem with that. I did that for 2 months. I never delivered any pizzas, but I became the manager like in the first month, and I was definitely overwhelmed. Yeah. It was tough, but we grinded. I mean, I'd have to wake up. No one's really asking me what I did, but I'd have to wake up to make pizzas for the local school. So I'd be there at 8 o'clock making, you know, 100 pizzas for the school every morning. And then I'd be closing every night. So I wouldn't get home till about 2 in the morning.
Wow.
It was just a grind, but I was doing it because, you know, you got a kid, you got a wife, you know, I had a little bit of money saved, but not, you know.
Something you got to eat. Yeah.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you take care of your family. So about Christmas time, you know, my agent calls me up and asks me if I still want to play. And I'm like, yeah, what's going on? And he said, well, the Mets need a catcher for spring training, and they're still interested. The you know, the player development guy knows you and he's watched you and they just want to know what, if you still want to play. And I'm like, yeah, so go to spring training and I had a good spring with Bobby in 97. And then I got sick during spring training. So I was out for a week. And then I got back and Bobby said, Todd, you need to, I was going to keep you to the end of spring. I mean, I wasn't going to make the team. Hundley was there.
Right, Hundley.
Yeah, and maybe Brian Castillo might have been backing him up or something.
Yeah, Alberto.
Anyway, I wasn't going to make the team. He said, you weren't going to make the team, but I was going to keep you until we played the exhibition games, you know. And but they just told me that you need to get a job down there. And I'm like, really? I'm like, oh, all right. So I go down to spring training. I don't play the first three. You know, there's only a week left. I don't play the first three games. I'm like, you know, I said, God, you know, I know what's going on. I'm 29, it's done.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm getting bombs and BP. Everybody's like, who is this guy? And then the player development guy comes and talks to me the day before they make cuts. And he's all, Todd, you're going to have a good attitude in Norfolk. You know, you're going to back up this young kid. And I'm like, I'm going to have a good attitude. I've been out of baseball. You know, do whatever you want. So, get to Norfolk that year. I'm backing up Charlie Green. And he plays that first Friday-Saturday game. And back in then, there's the new Syracuse Park, the Blue Jays. And I get to play the Sunday game. Doesn't that sound familiar?
But yeah.
I go 4-for-5 with 2 home runs and 5 RBIs, and then the rest is history. I start playing well at Norfolk, and I get the call that year.
Right, and you go back up. You back up Hundley.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, what did you think when the Mets go out and get Piazza? That must have been a death knell for you, right? You figure, what the heck is going on?
Yeah, I mean, it just is. You know, I play that 97 year. I did good. 98. We know that Humphrey's not going to be there, and they had a bunch of catcher, young catcher. You know, Bobby comes in the office and tells all of us, none of you have the job, and that kind of hurt me, you know, in 98. I was like, what? I just played good for half a season, you know? I don't make the team. I was probably at that point, I wasn't even going to go to spring training, you know, go down to Myers, because I was like, you know, I just hit 300 for you guys and Triple. I have nothing to prove down there. Anyway. Manager back then, Rick Dempsey, comes to my apartment and says, Todd, you need to come spring. I promise you, you're going to be back up. Everybody's pissed off, and the minor league organization, you know, minor league coaches are all mad. This decision was made, and blah, blah, blah. And I said, all right. I loved Rick. I said, okay. Well, you look at those numbers in 98, I'm hitting like 350.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the year that before we got Mike, so I got called up, I think, I mean, you might check the number. We had George Fabregas.
Oh, yeah.
Rick Wilkin.
Boy, those are some names.
And
yeah.
Remember all the catches?
Yeah.
Four guys on the roster, and I'm the one playing, but they kept sending me down because I had the option. And I'm like,
that's the
what
thing.
Is going on? You know what I mean? And, I mean, I remember one time I won the game against Pittsburgh, pinch hit, base hit up the middle. And I got, right after the game, they said, Kyle, we need to send you down and just trade for an outfielder. I'm like, oh, you guys are killing me.
Yeah.
But I always had a good attitude. I said, well, I told Steve and Bob, will tell him I'm going to be down there tomorrow until them Sam batting third. You know, I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'll at least take it out. Anyway.
Finally.
Yeah, finally.
You get your chance.
Piazza
hurts his thumb, right?
Well, people, they trade for Piazza. Because I'm up there, and no, I was happy. I mean, getting Mike Piazza, yeah, it hurt up me, but, I mean, we needed him, you know?
Exactly.
And we needed him. Just the way of the game. I knew my role, so it was great. And then 99, you know, what a great, you know, just great, you know?
The home run, exactly. Piazza injures his thumb in the NLDS against the Diamondbacks. Todd starts the final two games of the series. The Mets won 3. Rick Reed was involved in that. Now Todd comes up big in game 4 with a walk-off home run against Matt Manti. I believe it was over the center field fence at Shea Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
What did you hit? What did he throw you that time, Todd?
It was a fastball. I mean, that thing about that most people don't know, I could have easily been the GOAT, that game, because in the 8th, they brought Manti in, and there was a man in third base, one out, and all I had to do was hit a sack fly. But I grounded 17 hopper right back to him. But I just, you know, kept my spirits up, just needed to know that I'm not trying to replace Mike offensively. I just need to catch and keep our team into it. And before even the home run, what about that throw from Melvin Moore to me, you know, to cut that run off Jay Bell at home plate?
Yeah.
What a great throw, you know, and if we don't make that play, I don't have that chance to hit that home run. So
that's true.
I give Melvin Moore a lot of credit there. And anyway, he threw me a breaking ball. I think there might have been one out, breaking ball, first pitch, and I was like, wow. And it was like a 55-footer, and I'm like, well, this be on time. And the rest was history.
Yeah.
You know, when I hit it, I knew I hit it enough, but then when I started seeing Finley kind of timing his jump, I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
You got to catch this ball. Yeah. You know, because when you, as a hitter, when you hit it, you're like, oh, there's no chance. You know what I mean? But then I saw many years do this. I'm like, what are they timing it up for? You know?
Yeah.
So I'm rounding, you know, right before I hit first, and I see him go up, and you see me pause, because when he went up, I was like, oh, I got it. And then most people ask me, well, how'd you know he didn't get it? Because when he looked in his glove, I was like, if he caught it, he wouldn't be looking in his glove. And that's when I knew.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it was just amazing.
Hit. Yeah.
And just rounding second base and looking up in the stand, just seeing it shake and.
I mean, that place rocked.
I have pictures. Sometimes I reminisce just looking at pictures of seeing fathers and sons and just the enjoyment they were having. That was just awesome.
What a moment in Met history. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. One of the big ones. Now, also, you're involved. Game 5 of the NLCS, Ventura hits what should be a grand slam, right?
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I'll take the, you know, people still bust my onions about it. But then I kind of, you know, most people forget there was 2 outs, I believe, right?
Yeah.
You know, and Bobby calls on me to pitch hit, and I'm like, wait a second. I looked from the bench. I'm like, wait a second. I'm not the last guy left. So I walk 4 straight pitches to tie the game. You know, if you remember that night, it's kind of pouring down rain.
Yeah, it was a lousy night.
Foggy. And so, you know, as a baseball player, you get on first, you're tied, you're geeked, but then your mind starts working. Okay, base hit, this guy pitched second. So that was what was on my mind. And when Ventura usually hits home runs. We used to call him Helium Boy. His home runs would be high fly balls. You know what I mean? They just never came down. So they said, we would tease him and say, man, your balls just have helium in them. They just don't come down. Not necessarily distance, but just so high they get. Well, I read it off the line drive in the gap, you know? And I was like, oh, we won the game. And I was so excited. The vision was bad. And obviously, Grand Slam single, and I still get killed on that, you know, so. I didn't make Las Vegas happy either, so.
Yeah. that's true, yeah.
Under overs.
What are you gonna do? Another great moment, though.
So my job thinking, just hit second and then let him celebrate with him. And, you know, you watch the video and Robin's kind of waving, and I'm like, well, maybe he's just happy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I don't think he would have ever, I think it would have been a grand slam double because the rest of the team would have tackled him because they were right behind him. But, you know, I apologize to Robin and he was cool with it. He was a little hot at first, but he's just like, come on, dude, you kind of steal the limelight, man, you know? I'm like, no, I didn't mean it that way, but it was all.
Yeah. Another great moment. Now, how about the 2000 series? What a thrill that was. Game 1 was a real downer to me, though. I remember watching that with my late father down at his house in Florida. Game 1 was a real letdown. But if the Yankees won that series, they never would have lived it down. Steinbrenner would have passed away, I think.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, most people ask me what was your highlight of the career, and they think about that home run, but and even though it was a top 10 history moment for the Mets, giving the responsibility and the trust of my teammates and the organization to start game 1 and letting Piazza DH that game was such a thrill for me. I will always remember that, hearing my name in Yankee Stadium. The game was a great game. Leiter pitched well. Mm-hmm. Edit pitched well. You know, we made one base running mistake. A great play by the shortstop. We've done it many times. On Zeal's ball off the wall. And just what a great at bat by, just their guys, you know, again, it was just, I think if we win that game, it might have been a better series. I'm not going to say we won it, but that would have broke those 8-game in a row wins for the Yankees in the World Series, and it kind of would have punched them in the mouth. You know?
I agree with you, Todd. Yeah.
You know, it would have been a different series. I'm not saying we would have won it. It was a great team, but it would have shown them, hey, we beat you for game one. It's on.
Exactly. Well, Todd, let me wish you good luck this year at Greensboro with the Grasshoppers. Hope you have a great season down there.
Well, I love giving back to the kids, and you know, I had a great first year over there in Greensboro, and what a great stadium, and I love the kids, and it's all about these guys and giving them the dream, and hopefully reach it.
Sure. Well, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight, Todd. Thank you for taking the time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us up here in New York. And as I said, all the best to you.
Well, I appreciate it, Bill, and good luck with you.
Thank you so much. Todd Pratt, folks. Next up, we'll talk with 86 New York Mets, Wally Backman. Stay with us, folks.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, folks, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on GBB. Bill Donahue with you tonight. Hope you're enjoying the show. Been watching the Olympic Games in Pyeongchang. They're in full swing right now. I got up the other morning to watch the hockey game, USA versus the Olympic athletes from Russia. They call them that because Russia is really not allowed in the Olympics because of the doping scandal. But they really took it to the USA 4-0. That was rough. I believe one of the Russians was caught doping on their curling team. Imagine that. Why do you have to dope yourself if you're playing curling? I mean, well, you have to be high to watch it. I know that. But right, Brian? It's certainly boring, and it shouldn't be in the Olympics. But aside from that, my next guest, he was really one of the spark plugs of those great Met teams in the mid-'80s, the late-'80s, most memorably the 86 World Champion Club, a real gritty and tough ball player for Davey Johnson's clubs, whether he was grinding out, a base hit, or going into the hole to rob someone. This year, he'll manage the New Britain Bees in the Atlantic League, and you can see him when they come to visit the Long Island Ducks here in Central Islip. I welcome in tonight Wally Backman. Wally, good evening.
Hey, good evening, Bill.
Great to have you with us. It's been a long time coming. I've been trying to get you for a couple of years.
No, it's good to be back. You know, I never let my heart leave New York. That's probably one of my biggest problems, but
yeah,
and always great to me.
And believe me, they love you here too. When you were growing up, Wally, who were your favorite ball players, and who did you root for?
You know what? It's kind of funny because when I was young, I was born in '59. Buddy Harrelson.
Yeah, me too.
Buddy Harrelson was one of my favorite players, and for them to win the '69 World Series I was ecstatic about it. You know, I mean, the Pete Rose thing, all that kind of stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Pete Rose, I'm a huge fan of Pete Rose as well. I mean, what he's done in baseball is second to nobody.
Right.
But you know what? Growing up in Oregon, I never really had a favorite team, but believe it or not, the Mets were the team that I was pulling for when they played Baltimore in '69. And, hey, I was fortunate enough at a young age to watch him win.
Definitely. Yeah, good choice, Wally. Have you heard about Buddy Harrelson?
Yes, I have.
Okay,
you know, Buddy,
yeah.
I'll see Buddy this summer. And,
right.
You know, I kind of knew a couple of years ago, Buddy and I did an appearance together, and you could tell there was some changes, but you know what? He's got a great family behind him.
He does.
His ex-wife, Kim, they're so supportive of everything that he does. And Buddy is a wonderful person.
He
don't
is.
Don't get me wrong.
And for those folks who are unaware, Buddy Harrelson was diagnosed very sadly with Alzheimer's disease. And Wally said, he's being taken very good care by his family. And we hope he gets through this on top of the situation. Getting back to Wally, you had good times at Tidewater. They called you up. You made your major league debut against the Dodgers out at Dodger Stadium. You remember you got a single and drove in Claudel Washington in your first at bat.
A 44 hopper up the middle.
And that was it. Yeah. They say on the Mets broadcast, in the box score, it looks like a frozen rope.
Yep, no.
Yeah.
Exactly.
No, nobody knows.
I think about it, might have been.
Exactly. Now, you get to the New York Mets. You battled for a couple of seasons to get a starting job. They finally give it to you. You hit .280 and 32 stolen bases, which was second to Mookie. So you really ran a lot. Who was the manager back then when you first came up?
Well, when I first came up to the big leagues, it was '80, and Joe Torre was the manager.
Wow.
And my
day, yeah.
Like you said, was in Los Angeles. But you know what? I played for great managers. I do appreciate the guys that I played for. You know, Joe Torre, even George Bamberger, a short time for, you know, with Davey,
right.
Johnson. You know, I played for some good guys. Lou Piniella, Tom Kelly. I played for Jim Leland.
Right. Yeah.
I played for some of the best managers, I think, that were involved in baseball.
Now, how did you feel, Wally, when Cashin makes a deal to bring Tuffel over?
You know what? I've seen it, you know.
You know,
Frank was trying to make the team a better team, and I think he did. And I think if you add Jimmy's and my numbers up together for a single season, they're pretty good numbers. I don't know exactly what they are. But we were big producers, you know. Timmy drove in runs. I stole bases. I scored runs. I hit for a higher average. But, you know, like I said, Timmy drove in more runs. And I think if you add those numbers up together, you know, in a platoon situation, I'd take it every day.
Okay. Yeah, it certainly was a great platoon. We got Wally Backman with us tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, Davey also platooned Mookie and Lenny Dykstra in center field. So between those guys and whoever was in the lineup, Tuffel or yourself, you really provided a spark at the top of the lineup, didn't you?
Well, I think that always, no matter what, the 1 and 2 hole hitters really set up the 3-4 guys and the 5-hole hitter.
Right.
And, you know, vice versa. And you have to have a good on-base percentage to set those 3-4-5 hitters up. You know, I mean, I seen in the paper, I think it was today about, or yesterday, about trying to lead Frazier off. Frazier's a great player for the Mets. He's going to be a great player, but he's a run producer. He's not a leadoff guy. They talk about leading off a guy that he's got a lifetime on base percentage of 32%. That doesn't work. I don't care where your math comes in, but numbers is what I'm good at. But, you know, he's a run producer. So you have to have guys with high on base percentage, guys that can steal a base, guys that you can put in motion that don't strike out too much. And that's what Lenny and I did. You know, Lenny and I would get on base. We had our own signs to bunt and run and things like that. And we weren't going above the manager. It was our own sign to try to put our team in a position to succeed.
And you certainly did. That's a great story about yourself and Lenny, that you had your own signs. Now, finally, you guys in 86, what a tremendous team. What a magical year that was. You get to the World Series after that tremendous series with the Houston Astros with that 16-inning game. I remember that, Wally. I was in a bar in Manhattan, and we said, let's go down and watch the last couple of outs. You know, and we were there all night. We were loaded by the time the game ended.
Yeah, no, what a great game, you know. I mean, nobody wanted to face Mike Scott in game 7.
No.
And it was huge. It was a huge game. Lenny came in, got a huge hit for us off of Nepper. Huge game, to put ourselves in a position to win the National League East and to go to the World Series. You know, Lenny deserves a lot of credit. I mean, he got one of the biggest hits in that whole season that we had all year.
Yeah, Dykstra certainly deserves a lot of credit. Then he came through in the World Series as well. We'll talk about the legendary Game 6, Wally. Now, you led off in that inning, and you flew out. Now, where were you for the rest?
Left field. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, it flew out to the Hall of Famer. Jim Rice.
He flew out next.
Yeah, exactly. Now there's two outs. Where are you? Did you go in the clubhouse? Did you stay on the bench?
I was sick and I was playing and I was frustrated because I made the first out and, you know, I seen Keith make the next out. I think Keith went to the clubhouse after that out and it was like, God, we just had an opportunity to win the ultimate. And I really felt that against the Red Sox, we played the worst 6 games that we ever played, or 7 games, for the season. And to be able to overcome that, I tip my hat to all the guys I played with. There was heart, desire, determination, and that's what they did. We were able to overcome it.
Right. Now, what happens? The kid comes up and gets a base hit to left, right?
Well, it was a jam shot that he hit kind of over Marty Barrett's head, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mitchell was in the clubhouse, and he was halfway undressed when he was asked to pinch hit and got a base hit.
Right.
You know, Ray got the big hit, you know, and then the play that happened with Mookie hitting the ground ball to first base. You know, I'll say it till I die that Bill Buckner should not have been in there. Great player, Hall of Fame numbers, but Dave Stapleton always came in for defense because Buckner had the bad Achilles.
Why and McNamara Buckner never made that decision, Wally, we'll never know.
No, I know. You know, that was McNamara's decision.
Yeah.
I get it that you want a veteran guy to be out there giving him opportunity to win, but the fact is, you got to win.
Mm-hmm. Especially in that position.
Yep.
You got your foot on the throat of the New York Mets, and you don't have your best defensive club out there.
No, you know, I remember him putting it up on Diamond Vision. It's what they called the big billboard.
Right.
That they congratulated the Boston Red Sox for winning the World Series. Well, that just didn't happen.
Nope. No, it did not. Yeah. And that, as we say, the famous hit gets by Buckner, and you see Buddy Harrelson running in to congratulate everybody. The place went nuts. And then we go to Game 7. The Mets are behind again.
Yeah, we were. You know, there was a day off. I think there was a rain out for Game 7.
All right. Yeah, that's right.
And, no, we fell behind, but, you know, the determination, what we had in mind after coming back in Game 6 was there was no way we were going to lose this game. And we were rested, probably more mentally than physically, because I don't think physically you break down as fast. And we never thought we were going to lose Game 7. I think that everybody believed that we were going to win that game somehow. When we fell behind, we just fought. We fought.
Right. That's exactly what happened. And the rest, they say, as they say, is history. We're speaking to legendary Met Wally Backman tonight. Some teammates on that club, Wally, you had the pitching staff with Doc, Ojeda, Ronnie Darling, Sid. You had Aguilera, Roscoe, McDowell. What about those guys?
Pretty good pitchers, if you ask me.
Right.
I'd take them right now, of course. Maybe not New Britain, maybe 10 years ago I would, but you know what? We had two guys who could close. We had a great starting rotation with the guys that you just mentioned. I look at it and I see the rotation that the Mets could possibly have if they could stay healthy. And they got a legitimate chance if they can stay healthy.
Right. That's the key.
Grom, Harvey, Syndergaard, Wheeler. If those kids stay healthy, I'm going to tell you what, New York's going to surprise a lot of people. The Mets will surprise a lot of people.
Well, from your mouth to God's ears, as they say, Wally, as many people, if that staff stays healthy, oh, boy.
It's the key. The key to success is pitching. And the Mets have the opportunity to have that key to success. If they put everything in line the right way, you know, with their offense, their pitching's going to be good. They have the pitching if they stay healthy. You know, I mean, I'm looking for, I don't root against them. All the stuff that I went through with the Mets, I don't root against guys like Harvey, DeGrom, Syndergaard, Wheeler. I had them all. And I want them all from the 20 games.
People don't realize that they played for Wally before they went to Terry Collins.
They're capable of doing those things. They really are. You know, I mean, you got Lugo, Gazelman. You got guys that can fit in or fall in and be productive and help you win a championship. So pitching is the key. The Mets have that if they can stay healthy.
You're tremendously right, Wally. Now, also on the 86 club, you had some great leaders. You had Keith Hernandez. You had Gary Carter. And then you had the raw talent, a guy with the unlimited potential like Daryl Strawberry.
You know what? We had everything a team desires for. We had speed. We had power. We had leadership with Gary and Keith. And plus, they were really, really good players.
Right.
You know, I mean, there was a question. I mean, to me, Keith was probably the biggest leader we had. You know, Gary was a leader. He ran the pitching staff, a young pitching staff. And that goes a long way when you have a veteran guy that knows how to run a pitching staff. So we had all the ingredients to win games. And, you know, 86 was, we were fortunate. We put it together in 86. You know, I look back and think, you know what? If there was a wild card team back then, everybody will say, well, you only went to the playoffs twice. Well, we went in 84, 85, 86, 87, 88. And they might have went in 89.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, I mean, it was a great team with great personalities. And we had the leadership from veterans that all good teams have to have. And we had it in Gary and Keith, without a question.
For sure.
And we have talent, too.
Wally Backman with us tonight. Now, 88, Wally. Oh, certainly one of the low points that I remember in my tenure as a New York Mets fan, that when Socia hit that home run off Doc, that basically put a knife through my heart. I remember that so well. The 88 club was another team destined for greatness.
Well, you know, we beat the Dodgers 11 out of 12 times during the regular season.
Right, yeah.
And we thought, you know, it's funny because after we won the World Series, we thought, you know what, this is going to be a pushover. And the Dodgers fought, and they fought hard. They had a Hershiser that year, and Oral was absolutely phenomenal that year. So, you know, we had our hands full, and we fell short. And, you know, maybe we're partly to blame because we thought we were going to walk through the park, and that just didn't happen.
No. It was a heartbreaker, Wally. That's for sure, as a Mets fan. One of the low points. Now,
I had my buddy come out to L.A., Doug Keller.
Yeah.
Who lives in West Islip.
Okay, yeah, stone's throw.
Fell into the pool when he came out for that playoff series. And I love Doug. I've been friends with him forever. But when I seen a guy in a suit fall in the pool at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I couldn't laugh so hard in my life.
Oh man. Yeah. Oh, West Islip, just a stone's throw from the station here, Wally. Yeah, definitely. Now, how did you feel when they sent you to the Twins?
I didn't even know where Minnesota was. And that's the truth.
Oh man.
I was flustered, frustrated, as all players do, if you play for a team. I started my career with the Mets when I was 17 years old, and I never wanted to leave. I was never happy after I left the Mets. You know, I had a good year in Pittsburgh.
You did.
And you know, we won the pennant that year and lost to the Reds in the playoffs, but I was totally shocked when I left the Mets. I knew that something was happening. And, yeah, that's probably a bad time in my career because I didn't want to leave.
No. What a downer. Yeah. Now, when I tried to have you on the show previously when you were with Las Vegas, Wally, but, I went through Jay Horowitz, who I've never, I've never had success dealing with Jay Horowitz. They wouldn't let me have access to you. They wouldn't let me have access to Frank Viola. Nobody. And the gentleman who was in charge down in Vegas, his hands were tied. He told me that they were probably afraid of what you were going to say.
You know what? I'll tell you the truth and nothing but the truth. You know, I get it. I understand that it's a business, but it really changed when Sandy came there, Alderson.
Yeah.
And you couldn't talk. And I tried to tell Sandy many, many times that, you know what, I've known these reporters for 30 years. And I built the rapport with these people to talk to them. I would never degrade the organization. I would never say anything bad about the players. But yet, my hands were tied. I couldn't talk. And
right.
Maybe that's my downfall, that I probably did talk maybe too much, but never said a bad thing about players. You know, I mean, I read everything that's going on with the Mets. Mm-hmm. You know,
I mean,
Sandy said today that Tebow's going to probably play in the big leagues. You know what? Tim Tebow's a good guy. He's a nice guy. And I hope he does play in the big league. But the bottom line is he's 30 years old. He's a 220 lifetime hitter in A-ball. At 30.
Right.
He hit 194 in a fall league in 16 and probably took a potential prospect spot to play in the fall league.
True.
I have nothing against Tim Tebow. And I think he's a great person. I believe in everything he believes in. But let's be serious about this. When I was 30 years old, I was on the downscale of my career. And you know, I really do hope that Tebow plays in the big leagues, but what a statement to make. A 220 lifetime hitter that's 30 years old is going to play in the big leagues?
Right.
Come on, give me a break.
Yeah. Yeah, to me, Wally, that's a PR stunt. I mean, like you say, good guy, does a lot, but that's a PR stunt for Alderson and the Wilpons to try to get more people in the ballpark.
Well, you don't get more people in the ballpark unless you're in the big league, so I don't know. You might be right. I don't know. I think some of the things that people say, let's talk about reality. Let's talk about how we're going to win the World Series. That's
right.
The real deal.
Yeah.
That's the only reason you play baseball, is to win the World Series, win a championship. And unfortunately, for Timmy, it's probably not going to happen as an everyday player. But like I said, good person, nice guy, great to talk to. I mean,
not a big leaguer.
No, he's not a big leaguer.
No.
I mean, it's reality.
Exactly, Wally, yeah. Now, did Sandy tell you in Vegas or anybody from the organization that you had to resign or you were going to get fired anyway?
Well, it was either or. I had no choices.
Yeah.
You know, I know that last year before I went to Mexico, I did call Jeff. And Sandy had made the statement that players weren't prepared the way they had been in the past coming out of AAA. So I thought, you know what? Let me call. Let me see if I can go back and just try to help the organization. You got to understand that this was my family. When I left my family in Oregon, I had been east of Salt Lake City, and I was taken into those arms. And when I went to New York, it was all or nothing. I was trying to help in any way or until 2016, any way that I could. And it just, I guess there's a falling out. You know, I don't know what it was. If, you know, I mean, I remember saying that how much I loved Matt's at a thing at McFadden's.
Yeah.
And how I thought Syndergaard could win the Cy Young. He had the potential to win the Cy Young. And I loved the determination of Matt's. I loved what type of player he was. I know he's had a lot of injuries, but determined like I've never seen anybody. And I got in trouble for that, for saying two good things about two really good pitchers that I hope to God that Matt stays healthy for 1 year to show everybody what this kid's all about. Because I'll tell you what, the fight, the fire, the desire that this kid has, it really is second to none. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from DeGrom. I mean, DeGrom came to me at a double A with a backpack on his back to AAA, and he pitched one game for me in Iowa. I think it was Iowa. And they said, well, we got to send him back to double A. And I thought, this guy's the best starting pitcher I had. I said, seriously? I mean, Harvey, Syndergaard, Wheeler, these guys have great stuff, great arms. Gazelman, great sinker. Lugo's a overachiever, I think. But these guys, they have the potential to be great players.
Sure do. I hope that it comes to fruition, Wally. I'd like to thank you for taking part out of your Sunday night to spend it with us here in New York, Wally. I also like to thank Paul Herman from the Bees for giving me the opportunity to speak with you.
Oh, tell Paul he's a butthead.
Okay, yeah.
Good guy. He's a great guy.
And we hope to see you out in Long Island here playing the Ducks with Buddy. I hope Buddy will be out there. And again,
oh, I'm sure he will be.
And it'll be great to see you too this summer. And again, thanks a lot, Wally.
Bill, you take care.
You too, Wally. Wally Backman, folks. Well, that'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Todd Pratt and Wally Backman, my engineer, good old Brian Graves, and you for joining us. I appreciate that, folks. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. I'll see you on March the 4th. Until then, this is Bill Donahue, folks, and I'm wishing you a good evening.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.